Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson, Thursday edition. Welcome to the program. Preds back on the ice tonight. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7, and somebody will be back in the building. I guess people might care about who will be back in the building. I mean, some might care, Derek, about what might take place tonight. I don't know if everybody does.
Somebody, anybody.
But somebody will care that PK Subban is back in Smashville.
You think Predator fans will care?
I think... Yes.
What do you think his reception would be? Because, you know, obviously, you know, listening to the station yesterday, they brought it up several times. And, you know, it's not like he left and there was any animosity or anything else.
No,
you know,
no.
He said bye to the Nashville fans. He thanked them for everything, thanked the organization. His years here, I mean, you can arguably say – I mean, you can say they were the best 3 years of Predator history when he was here.
No question.
And he had a part in that.
And and not really even close.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right about that.
I mean, from a three-year window, it's not even close. It's the greatest three-year window of Preds hockey, period. Like, not even close.
So he was a part of that. So he will always, you know, have a place, I believe, in this organization. He will always have a place here in Nashville. In regards to how the fans, how they endeared him when he was here, you know. So I think his coming home, so to speak, his second home, you know, because he started off in Montreal, so his second home. I think it's going to be nice. I don't know.
Oh, I think the fans will be.
Yeah, I think the fans will be jacked up. And then when the game started, they'll boo him, just like always.
I
wonder if, you know, they give him, you know, some type of, you know, little tribute either before the game or during intermission or something. I think it would be
nice.
Ooh,
I don't know about the tribute.
Just sort of, you know.
I don't know about that.
You know how I know the NFL, they do it.
Now,
the NFL does it, especially with a guy who has been with the team for a very long time. They did it for Steve. They did it for myself. First time coming back. So, you know, I mean, it would be nice. You know,
I think the first game back, and again, my memory is a little off on this. I believe they did a tribute video to Shea Weber.
I think so.
When Montreal first returned and played here the first year, the first game back for Shea Weber, I think they did a tribute video before the game, or maybe during intermission, or during one of those breaks or something. I can't remember exactly when and how it was executed. But I'm fairly sure they did one of those. Now, that guy was the captain of the team.
Did they do one for Trotsky, too?
And he's been there forever. Trotsky, again.
He had been here forever.
I just wonder, with PK only being here for 3 years. But, I mean, man, you could pack pack a lot of highlights into a 1 minute video. So, listen, here's what's interesting about PK. I find this to be fascinating because I'll be honest. Uh-huh. I have not watched a lot of New Jersey Devil hockey.
I mean, who has?
I mean Devils fans aren't watching a lot of New Jersey Devil hockey.
They're not doing too good.
So,
huh?
I have not watched a lot of it, but I checked out his numbers. He's played in all 27 games for them.
Which is a plus.
He's got 2 goals, 3 assists. He's got 5 points in 27 games. He's not exactly producing.
No.
He's got a negative 12 plus minus. But again, the team sucks. So, like, it kind of is what it is. Here's the thing, though. Like, I feel like they desperately miss his edge and attitude and leadership right now. Like, just in general, I think his existence would help. But he's not overly productive right now. So it feels like it was the right – it still feels like the right trade to make. It just – you know, could this team at times this year have used his level of sort of expertise and just experience and defensive prowess, physicality on the back end? Yeah, I think they could have.
It's you go into certain situations, and sometimes, you know, you see it in certain sports – a guy go from one team to another. He's producing at one team. He goes to another, and then the numbers are just not there. And then you look at the whole team in its totality, and the team is not good. So you say, well, is it him or is it the team?
Yeah, it's hard to really.
Which one is it? You know, he left here playing good hockey in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think if he was on a better team, I think his numbers would be a little bit better. Because what I've noticed about hockey, it's weird from this sense. If you're paired with other guys, it can make you even you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some lines, that's why they, you know, take lines and they match them up because guys' strengths and they don't have to do this. That's sometimes that in basketball do it a little bit. Where I'm gonna put you here because this guy does this well, you counterbalance him, you do this well. Hockey is a weird sport like that. And maybe, you know, PK right now is not on a line where, you know, they mesh. And obviously, none of them mesh because the team's not doing well, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's...
I think he will
is
get...
Is it numbers or is it the team?
I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Also aging. So, I think, again, did they get out of PK Subban's contract at the right time? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Are they still missing the things that he does well? Probably. Would I make the trade again? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's all fine. There's nothing controversial here. Just don't tell me you don't think that there weren't times this year where you missed a guy like PK Subban on the back end of that team playing the way he did. So it'll be interesting to see, of course, with the Devils coming into town tonight. And obviously, and I did not get a chance to have any commentary about this, but Kyle Turris, of course, back on Tuesday.
Yes.
Scores the
big
goal.
Splash, Kyle.
Sparks the offense. So I expect we see him again tonight. What was the vibe on the program yesterday about Kyle Turris? I did not get a chance to instantaneously react with you and Corey yesterday.
I think the vibe was good. It was one of you know, relief. We had Adam on and you know, we talked about it a little bit. It was I think what all of us notice, myself, Corey, and talking with Adam, is when he scored the goal, you just saw that, because he didn't celebrate.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like he had that
relief.
Look on his face,
relief,
like,
man,
you know what? This is what I can do. Or the look of, it went in.
And by the way, I've got a... I've now done it twice because I'm so used to Tuesday, Thursday. They are off for a couple of days, and that game is Saturday night against...
No, not another Saturday night.
Against the Devils. Yeah, another Saturday. So I have no idea why my brain just crapped out there in the first segment of the show. But it will be fascinating and interesting to watch. So I did not have a chance to comment on it, though, but I did watch a lot of the game.
We have good feedback on it. Like I said, I think everybody was relieved that he scored, that he played well
pretty
throughout
critical,
the game. Yeah.
Pretty critical goal.
He played well throughout the game. And, you know, it was just, you know, he was ready when the opportunity came. It was like he was prepared. He was ready. He wanted to puck bad. As soon as he got it, he shot it. It went in. And his face was like, it was almost like a sort of a big middle finger and a, you know,
an exhale.
I told you so, an exhale, and a this is why I need to be on the ice all together.
Flipping the bird and I told you so is always a great combination.
Exactly.
Think about your marriage. Think about the situations in which you would say, I told you so.
I told you, baby.
And we're able to flip the bird and get away with it.
Exactly.
There's not many of those in America. Unless people have different relationships.
Yeah, you know, you probably could flip the bird all day, every day.
There's probably plenty of relationships where there's lots of chops busting. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
There's probably a lot of relationships, and my wife has no problem doing that to me. So, I don't, you know, it doesn't work as well the other direction, Derek.
Nah, not really.
I've only been married like 4 years, but
she
it doesn't
can
work
do
the
chops busting, but then the minute you do it, it's like...
And then I have to explain to her, she's not listening right now, she's asleep. Then I have to explain to her what male communication is like.
Yes.
And that she just doesn't understand that male communication.
But then it messes everything up because you thought it was funny. You was busting her chops.
I'm laughing
and
having a great
time. Now you
got
to explain everything. It's like, oh my goodness.
I'm like, no, I really didn't mean this. Like, that's true. But this part I was totally kidding about. That you just don't, I have to, I'll show her text messages between me and my friends and relationships and just like guy conversations.
She don't get it.
And I'll be like, check this out, isn't this hilarious? And she'll just And she doesn't get. So now I've turned. Now it's turned into like a science experiment for me. Now I want to show her stuff on text conversation so that she can learn more about the male psyche.
So when you do say something in the future, she gets it.
I'm trying to get her a doctorate of male communication.
She can refer back to December 10th at 9 p.m. You showed her said text.
So I've shown you this, and I've told people about this. I don't think I've ever said it on the show before. So, and I know he's not listening, so it's fine. He's still asleep. But there's a really good buddy of mine who works in the sports media in Nashville, and he and I send photos of each whenever one of us is playing a road game, if you know what I mean.
Oh my goodness!
We'll take pictures of our feet when we're playing a road game. And we'll text. That's all we'll text to each other is just pictures of our feet playing road games. You know what I mean?
Yes, I got it.
You know what I mean when you're playing a road game. And I explained this and showed this to my wife, and she was like, "What the hell is wrong with you?
What are you, juvenile?"
And I looked at it. I was like, "It's funny." Here's a picture of the Neyland Stadium visitors' locker room. Here's a stall at Neyland Stadium's visitor locker room. Look at this.
Are you juvenile? Like, what is this?
Of course I am.
Ha, ha, ha. Did you take out the trash, by the way?
We just communicate differently. It's okay. We don't, you know, busting chops is part of the gig, man.
Hey, if you can't bust the chops, then.
Part of the gig. In fact, you guys should be killing me for saying that the Preds are back on the ice tonight. I don't know why.
They could be back They could be back on ice.
Just a total brain. Total brain fart on my part there. So
ice in that drink. I would say wearing ice, but I don't think hockey players wear ice.
All right, so some news out of Knoxville. I've got a question about Pro Bowl voting I want to get to. We've got to start looking ahead to the Raiders and the Titans. Some really interesting news about Josh Jacobs, the tailback for the Oakland Raiders, so we'll get to that. But there was a suspension for Juwan Jennings. So we'll get to that when we come back because there were some comments about that. And certainly, you know, everybody's got an opinion on this one. So I hate to break it to you, but every one of you is wrong. All of you. Both sides. You're both wrong. So chill out. We'll get to that, and we'll explain when we come back right here at Morning Drive. If you miss any of the show, we've moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify, or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, and Derek?
Subscribe.
There you go. Rate, review, and subscribe.
RRS.
Juwan Jennings has been suspended for the first half of the Tennessee Volunteers bowl game, which, of course, we'll find out more specifics about that coming up on Sunday. But, you know, it feels like we had a long conversation about this on Monday, and I got a text message from a couple buddies that were just like, why aren't y'all talking about Eric Gray? Why aren't y'all talking about all the good stuff? Because this particular incident for Vanderbilt fans and for Tennessee fans has sparked, you know, go to your corner both sides-ism, right? Where, like, everybody's got a side, and, like, he's either everyone's going to extremes on this Juwan Jennings thing, and that is that he's either this completely awful, terrible human being who intentionally tried to kill somebody, or like it was a complete, total accident, and he never did a single thing wrong. Well, the truth is probably in the middle. The reality is probably, well, it's an accident that could have been avoided. He probably could have controlled himself a little bit better, but he also probably wasn't intentionally trying to hurt somebody in like an egregious way. The reality is probably in the middle. He lost his temper a little bit, lost his cool. He's in a scuffle, a little bit of tussle on a football field against a rival that has got the better of him the last 3 years. I just think it's all sort of in the middle, and I know that pisses off both sides because they think they're right. Vandy fans think they're right, and Tennessee fans think they're right, and they're probably both wrong. The reality is down the middle, which is why he got a half-game suspension instead of a full-game suspension, because a full-game suspension obviously would be very different. Here's the quote, the statement issued by Philip Fulmer. Quote, Commissioner Greg Sankey shared his perspective on the actions in question. We had a long conversation about the matter, and we will honor the suspension. Juwan has been nothing but outstanding for our team and program this entire season. So Juwan Jennings will be suspended for the first half of the bowl game. You've heard my opinions. I think it's in the middle. I think this half-game suspension is accurate. Derek, you okay with the half-game suspension?
Yeah, I mean, you knew after it sort of, you know, went viral in a sense, you knew they were going to do something. They were not just going to let this kind of slide it up underneath the rug and move on to the bowl game. You knew they had to do something. You didn't want to completely suspend the guy for
for the whole game. It's his final game,
yeah, it's his final game. Because it wasn't – because you couldn't really tell intent. You probably sat there and thought, well, yeah, he could have avoided him if he wanted to. But it doesn't really look like he meant to do it. But we got to do something. We're sorry to the Vandy fans, the Vandy team, that program. So we got to do something. And, you know, you suspend him two games. I mean, you suspend him the first half of a game, and then you kind of move on.
Also important to note that, you know, Justice Shelton Mosley, the player for Vanderbilt, who is a Harvard graduate transfer, was not some guy that he grew up playing against in Nashville, and there was some, like, long-standing, like, Nashville beef or whatever, like, in-state beef. Like you could tell Alante Taylor and Keyshawn Vaughn had some history.
Exactly.
Like, those guys had history playing in the state against each other. So this was not a, like, personal thing. This is just a key to the moment. It got caught up in it, and it happened. You can't tell me that he did nothing wrong. Like, I'm not going to buy the two separate corners of this argument where one side thinks he's 100% guilty and did everything wrong and he's a terrible human being, and the other side thinks he's perfectly innocent. Those just aren't reality, like, opinions. Like, you've got, it's the, I don't know. I think the half game suspension is the right call because it feels like it's a compromise.
Yeah, and for those, like you said, it's got to be one way or the other. Well, sometimes it's kind of in the middle, and it's like, maybe so. I don't know. Well, we got to do something, so let's do something. But for those that, and I've heard, you know, people, guys that I know, guys that I did shows with, you know, say, this is the most egregious thing I've ever seen. Well, did you just see what happened in Cleveland? Did you see what happened at Georgia Tech? Come on now. I mean, there are things that happen within football games that are much worse than this. I think sometimes we are all prisoners of the moment. It's like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Then you go back and you start thinking about things that have happened on the football field, and you say, well, nah, maybe that is maybe out of 100, that's 59. You know, it doesn't rank that high.
Life is, very you know? Few times in life is it so clear-cut black and white.
Exactly.
Life is gray area. Like, that's where that's where we all live. Everybody lives there. All of our, you know, if I listen to one of my buddies tell a story and my other buddy tell the same story, I know the truth is somewhere in the middle.
It's your truth. It's your truth, and then the truth.
Yeah.
So.
Well, listen, I'm glad he gets to play in the bowl game after going through all the things he's gone through throughout his career. It doesn't mean that what he did should go unpunished.
No,
so
you're right.
You know what? Truth is in the middle, gray area. I hate to break it to the two ends of the extreme on this, but you're both wrong. I know that probably makes everybody angry, but it is this sort of
because
Tennessee fans are going to say he doesn't deserve to get suspended at all, and Vanderbilt fans are going to say he should be suspended for the whole game. So okay, so we'll compromise and we'll go half game.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that at all. Transfer portal is just filling up. Like, I think there's some teams that, like, have double-digit players going into the transfer portal, which is insane. So there's going to be a lot of grocery shopping done by head coaches over the next few weeks with the transfer portal. But a name that it doesn't appear is going to ever be in the transfer portal is Jarrett Garantano, a guy that could transfer and play right away for his final season. I think he's earned the right to be the starting quarterback next year, at least going into the season. Think about had they not lost. I know everybody's going to hear this a million times, but think about, and Tennessee fans don't want to do this, but they probably should have been 9-3 this year instead of 7-5. The two losses at the start of the year were just inexcusable. Mm-hmm. And if Jarrett Garantano statistically was by far the best player on the team at that position, I love the upside of Brian Maurer, but I don't know. I still think that Garantano's earned the right to be the starter, and man, what a great story it would be if he could come back next year and start all the games and be like an 8 or 9 win team next year. He would be celebrated for sticking it out.
Yeah, he's always, I thought, been the best option for this team. Now, obviously, there are some things going on behind the scenes that he was doing in the game that, you know, that the coaches didn't take kindly to, that caused him to lose some trust in his teammates. Well, his teammates losing some trust in him. But I think he, after that Alabama game, he needed to be benched. he needed to sit on the sideline, because I don't think had that not happened, had he scored, then I mean the horse would have been out of the barn. There couldn't have been no way, no how you tell him as a quarterback what to do after that. I think he needed that to get himself back in line with what the team goals were. Maybe he was trying to do too much for a team that was struggling.
It was a mistake.
Yeah. And but he needed to be benched. But just because he needed to be benched didn't mean he wasn't the best option for the Vols. Well, at quarterback.
And I think he might have already been benched at that point. Like, I'm not even sure, because Maurer started the game against Alabama and got hurt, I believe. Uh-huh. So he wasn't even starting at the time. He was in and out of the lineup. But statistically, it wasn't even close.
No.
He was the most effective player at that position. And it doesn't mean his upside next year is higher than Brian Maurer's. I think the question Jeremy Pruitt has to ask himself this offseason is, does he need to get a younger player into the lineup, because that person is eventually going to be the guy, and that person needs to get reps, needs to develop, needs to have opportunities to play? Or is it more important to have a steady veteran hand and presence in the huddle and on the field? So I think both options are interesting. I think it's one of the more fascinating offseason topics we're going to have with Tennessee football, mm-hmm. is what does Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney do with that quarterback room?
Yeah, obviously, you know, they're going to recruit quarterbacks at that position, a player at that position. So you got to have to compete with someone coming in. You got to compete with the guys that are there. But I think it only makes, you know, Garantano a better quarterback, because he knows that if indeed he does stay, and it looks like he will, that he has to come back even better than he was this past season.
Yeah.
He has to come back ready to be the starter and ready to take over that position. Because the last thing the Vols want is this, we're not sure who the quarterback is going into Jeremy Pruitt's third year.
And what's interesting is this is a guy who received death threats this year from the fan base. Now, again, Tennessee fans are not unique to this. Like that. Like
that's, I just don't understand.
I know. Alabama kicker. Sean Clifford at Penn State, the quarterback at Penn State.
Yes.
When they lost to Minnesota, was getting death threats. And I'm like, guys, quit acting like an SEC school up there. Okay?
Death threats
is an SEC thing. You can't take that from the SEC, Big Ten.
I don't get that, man.
There needs to be a no tweeting to college athletes policy. But if you are over the age of 25, you should not be allowed to tweet at college athletes anything, unless you're saying something super positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a bad. It's just so dumb. It's so dumb. So my point is that no one would blame him.
Uh-huh.
You know, he may not be the starter next year. We're not really sure. I would expect him to be, but who knows? He's going to have to battle and earn it. He's been treated the way he's been treated by the fan base to some degree, mm-hmm. this year. No one would blame him if he transferred, if his name showed up in the transfer portal. Now, I believe you've already seen the freshman receiver DB Jared Means, and this is according to David Ubbin of The Athletic. Offensive lineman Ryan Johnson, Marcus Tatum, all those guys looks like they've already jumped in and moved into the portal. So I would not be surprised if Jared Garantano did that, or I wouldn't have been surprised, but it doesn't seem like he's going to do that. So I'm a Tennessee Vol is where he stands right now. So I, like I said, I wouldn't blame him, but it's a fascinating offseason topic to track and keep an eye on.
I think had he not got back into the starting lineup, then there obviously could have been a higher probability of him being in a portal. But now he's back in, he played well, helped lead him to a bowl game, and he's going to be the starter for the bowl game unless injury. I think he's the guy moving forward.
Yeah, and so from a fan base that Greg Schiano just couldn't help himself. Just couldn't help himself.
Derek a little Mason shot here at on Morning Drive,
and
yesterday.
Greg Schiano, of course, hired as the Rutgers head football coach. And
Greg Schiano,
if you live in this
getting the
city
Rutgers
and you're listening to us right now, and you don't know the Greg Schiano story at
Tennessee
yesterday, I don't know if we've got enough time.
I wonder what he had
in the
to
week
say.
To try to break it all down. Obviously,
when we come back,
that
Morning Drive. John Curry thought he had Greg Schiano hired, and then of course there was a revolt because of a very misleading Washington Post headline, to which a man's character was sort of dragged through the mud. I don't have a problem with people having an issue with the hire. I think Tennessee fans had a right to say, I don't think this is the right guy for the job on a football basis.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really had that discussion. And I think that's the one thing that I think is lost in this, is that we never really had a discussion about whether or not Greg Schiano would do a good job coaching football at Tennessee, mm-hmm. because we went right to this. We had politicians tweeting about the moral character of a man they knew nothing about. And it was selective moral outrage. I think I've said that many times. I think Tennessee fans acted the way they did because they didn't think he was going to be a good football coach. Had all of these other things that were on his resume at Tampa Bay, you know, the Washington Post headline. If all that was on John Gruden's resume, I don't think there would have been a single word said about it. I think John Gruden would have been hired in 2 seconds and Tennessee fans would have had no problem with it. So I call it selective moral outrage because they reacted, I think, in my opinion, again, not all of them, but the ones who are painting a rock and, you know, covering up child abuse, which is just, again, factually untrue, mm-hmm. from the evidence. There you can say, hey, there's baggage with Greg Schiano. I'm not sure I really want him being our coach. Or, hey, I don't think he's good enough to beat Georgia and Florida and Alabama every year. But we never really had that discussion. It just went right to screaming about a man's character on Twitter, and then of course the text messages with the reporter and John Curry, and then John Curry handling that the way he did that week. The whole thing just, you know, it was a debacle the way it worked out. And so Greg Schiano, who this time, Derek, when he was being sought after, or he was trying to get the Rutgers job, he had been recruiting for like 2 weeks, building a coaching staff for like 2 weeks for Rutgers, mm-hmm. and then the talks fell apart. And you know what happened? The opposite happened at Rutgers. The fans started protesting and getting upset, and boosters started backing out because they didn't close the deal with Greg Schiano. So that eventually led to Rutgers bringing in Greg Schiano. He had his press conference yesterday. So, in fact, the fans in Rutgers actually protested to get Greg Schiano hired. They were furious with the idea that they wouldn't bring him back. I get it. It's Rutgers. It's not exactly an elite program here. But he was asked a little bit about sort of the differences in the hiring processes both at Tennessee and at Rutgers, and he couldn't help himself. He says, and he just had a little one sentence for Tennessee fans, and he said, quote, I think reflecting on it just shows Jersey people are a little sharper. They get it. Number one,
that is a great line.
It's kind of funny, but
it is.
Number one, I don't think anyone can blame him for being pissed off about it.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone can blame him for being worked up about it. I also don't blame Tennessee fans for thinking, hey, he wasn't going to be a great coach at Tennessee. But again, that wasn't why people flocked to the streets, painted a rock, and took to social media to protest a hire. They protested him because, again, a misleading Washington Post headline about a situation that people didn't fully understand and have all the information to. I disagree with his take here. Mm-hmm. I totally disagree with his take. The reason Tennessee fans lost their minds that day was because they love their team too much. I always say there is a very fine line between great fan and terrible human being. And you can cross over that line from great fan into terrible human being very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it happens more in the SEC than it does anywhere else. Let's be very honest about that. It just means more. But it's a funny line. Tennessee fans, you probably all worked up about it today. I would say, who cares? Who cares? You got your guy. You showed improvement under Jeremy Pruitt today, like this year. Who cares?
This is what I want to happen. I just want next year, Greg Schiano turns this program around. They win 7 games. I just want them to win 7 games.
You know that's not
going to
happen, right?
I just want them to win 7 games.
All right.
And UT wins 7-8 games, and then they meet up in a bowl game. Oh, I would love it.
It would be great.
I would love it.
Well, at any point during his tenure, if they're in a bowl game, Rutgers will be vindicated by feeling like they got their guy.
Absolutely.
Again, Greg Schiano has history there. He coached there for a long time. He's one of the only guys that could get Rutgers football.
He went to seven bowls in 8 years?
He was amazing at Rutgers. But, you know,
bunch of really good players.
Right. And, you know, that's in the Big East. Mm-hmm. Now they're in the Big Ten East, which is it's a very different division, and mm-hmm. it's a much tougher job. And, you know, there's a big divide at Rutgers between academics and athletics. It's actually very much like Vandy, and it's a very difficult job. So getting to a bowl game right away is probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. I would love to see a press conference where Jeremy Pruitt and Greg Schiano are having to talk nice about the
the Tax Slayer Bowl.
Oh, my goodness. It would be so nice. I would love it.
The one thing I have not understood about Tennessee fans in this situation, there's many things, of course, but as an alumni, one of the things I don't understand is why it continues to be a thing that you kind of think about and deal with. Like, every time he didn't, like, Oregon didn't hire him, and people were like, oh, my God, see, it's Greg Schiano. He covered up for child abuse. And, like, no, that was just... That was never, like, why are you taking victory laps about somebody that's not related to your program anymore? It makes no sense. You were not vindicated by your behavior that day. He stayed on as the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator at Ohio State. Now he's a head football coach in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. This is not a guy that's unhirable. If anything, you made him that way by how you acted to some degree. He didn't, like, the things that he was accused of by Tennessee fans that day, there is no factual evidence to back up any of those claims, and you dragged the guy's name through the mud because you didn't like him as a football coach, not a person. You didn't know anything about him as a person, and that was my biggest issue. Clearly, I do not think that Rutgers fans are sharper than Tennessee fans about when it comes to football. I told it's just factually not true. Tennessee fans are far more rabid, far more competitive, know far more about the game. Rutgers fans had to convince their organization, their university, that this guy, like, hey, you guys need to care about football.
Yeah, that's why he said they're sharper.
That, like, you guys need to care about football. That's why you need to hire Schiano. They actually were protesting to get him hired, not the other way around. And finally, the powers that be at Rutgers decided to let him come back because he's the only guy that actually brings interest to the program. So, I don't know. It's one of those where... I wouldn't take it too seriously.
Yeah, if you're Jeremy Pruitt, you're not taking this as a job either. Because if you're looking at it, it's like, yo, they hired me. So are you trying to say that, you know, that they're not sharp because they hired me instead of hiring you? Like, what are you trying to say here?
Well, he's talking about the fans, not the administration. So he's not really talking about the University of Tennessee. He's talking about the fans. And again, I know this is going to be a mischaracterization and probably makes me just as bad as Greg Schiano here, but it's not like New Jersey doesn't have some stereotypes, too.
Oh, of course.
Like, people have stereotypes of the South.
Say the armpit of the U.S., they say
I
Jersey
didn't say
is.
It.
Hey, I'm just saying, that's what they say. I didn't say, I lived in Jersey, and...
I don't think Jersey football fans are all that great.
I'm not talking about the people, I'm just talking about the city. It's, you know, the state of Jersey, the city I lived in, and it's not...
It's different.
It's not desirable.
It's different.
It's not a place that when you're vacationing or thinking about vacationing.
You never want to go to Newark?
You know what, family? Let's go to Newark. Let's vacation in Newark. Let's vacation in Elizabeth. No.
Yeah, right.
No.
Maybe up north. Maybe up north in like Ramsey. You're fine.
Yeah,
up there.
Close. Yeah, I get that.
You get on the train at Grand Central Station to go over to New Jersey, and it always smells like murder. When you get on the train and you get
it
over
smells to, like something.
You get over to Secaucus and I'm like, oh, that's what crime smells like. Okay.
It smells like something. It's a bunch of, if you ever just taking that drive as you're coming into the city, it's just so many like smokestacks and
yeah,
it's just it's the right, airport. It's just my man. Gosh, I wonder.
Gym tan laundry, dude.
Man, this is just bad.
GTL, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely pollution. A place you got to ride through and, windows up, doors locked, keep it moving.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even...
Running red lights because I don't want
to me,
stop.
It was just, I never felt like unsafe. It was just like, you're riding through and it's just, some places you go, like at certain times of the year, it looks different from, you know, like the summertime. Like I'm telling people, in the summertime, the city of Detroit is great. You know, green grass everywhere. The city's hustling, bustling. You know, yeah, it has its
no
its,
humidity.
Its, you know, it has its things about it that's not good. But then in the wintertime, it is just it's depressing, man. And Jersey was like that, just depressing.
I agree with that.
It's like,
like you have to be in like a place like Manhattan for the cold weather in the north,
exactly.
Like Chicago or Manhattan,
exactly.
For it to be like actually fun. Again, I would say, listen, Tennessee fans, like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I would just say, who cares? Like, do you blame the guy for being upset about how he was treated?
No.
Of course not. Mm-hmm. But like, who cares? Like, is he acting inappropriately by taking a shot, calling his fans sharper? That's just wrong. He's inaccurate. I mean, I don't. You know, it's funny. I laughed about it, but like, I think that's all you need to do is just laugh. Like, just who cares? Don't take it personally. I'm sure the message boards are all irate right now. So I wouldn't take it personally. And listen, he's just He's taking a shot because he can take a shot. He's been hired as a head coach, and he's got his chance to dance and take his victory lap. So you guys took your victory lap, Tennessee fans, every time he didn't get hired, whether he was or wasn't in a candidate. Now he gets to take his victory lap at his press conference. So.
Yeah, and there's no way you're more sharper than this guy.
On Mondays and Thursdays. And then on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Ain't no way you're sharper than that guy.
What's your Twitter account again, Marquise?
There's no way you're sharper than that guy.
I'm going to send everybody to Marquise's Twitter account. Because I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's accent should be on trial here.
Technically, Jeremy Pruitt's one of me because he's an Alabama guy. So, I mean, that's a shot at me, too. But, hey, who cares?
There are stereotypes of people in the South, just like there are stereotypes of people in New Jersey, just like there are stereotypes of people on the West Coast. There's stereotypes of everybody everywhere.
Yeah.
Some of them exist for a reason, and some of them are stupid. And, you know, listen, we have a reputation down here in the South that precedes us from time to time when it comes to college football. We occasionally cross the line down here between good fan and bad human being. It happens quite often. I think there was a shotgun fight between two Alabama fans?
Oh, my hell.
Like, after a game where they won, and, like, the lady was, like, so angry that, like, her daughter or sister didn't cheer enough that they got into, like, a shotgun fight after the game. Like, and it wasn't, like, between an LSU and Alabama fan. It was between two Alabama fans, right?
Yeah. It just means more. It just means more.
Like, well, I don't want it to mean more if that's what it's going to mean. We end up in a shotgun fight. It's not like a rubber band fight.
What are you talking about? Good shotgun fight on a Friday? Nothing wrong with that.
When it comes to college football, no one does it better than the South. It's just so that's why, obviously, Vols fans had that reaction.
It's why my alma mater overreacted, and politicians who needed to focus on things in their district they needed to fix were worried about the moral authority of the head football coach of Tennessee. You all right over there? Did you hit your knee on something? A shotgun fight on a Saturday night. Who doesn't love a good shotgun fight?
Goodness.
Oh, man. All right, injury report out for the Tennessee Titans. Some really interesting news on Josh Jacobs for the Oakland Raiders. And what are the actual possibilities for the Tennessee Titans with the final four games? I think everything's on the table. We'll explain. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson producing. And the injury report, of course, yesterday for the Tennessee Titans. Some interesting names there. Not on the list. Practicing, of course, Derrick Henry, Corey Davis, Adam Humphreys, Adoree Jackson, LaShawn Sims, Darren Bates all did not participate yesterday. Ben Jones limited, Tajay Sharpe in full participation mode. I don't think it means much for Corey Davis or Derrick Henry and Adam Humphreys. It feels like those three guys are okay, but Adoree Jackson and LaShawn Sims are the names you're really keeping an eye on because of the injury situation there and what the secondary will look like. An interesting note, though, as Josh Jacobs, the running back for the Raiders, who's going to be probably the primary focal point of the offense this weekend for Dean Pease and the Titans defense, he posted on social media that he's been playing with a fractured right shoulder since week seven. Since week seven, he's been playing on a fractured right shoulder. Now, as a regular old radio host human being, Derek, who never played 15 years in the NFL like you, that sounds completely insane to me. So in Green Bay was week seven. He carried the ball 15 times against Houston, 28 times against Detroit, 16 times against the Chargers, 23 times against the Bengals, 10 against the Jets, and 17 last week against the Kansas City Chiefs. All of those carries came with a fractured right shoulder.
What I'm saying to Josh Jacobs...
Is this like malpractice by John Gruden?
No, it's not. I mean,
so you can just play on a fractured shoulder.
Yeah, if he wants, if the medical team clears you, and you go out there and you can't do any more damage to it than what it is, then it's up to the player to then go out there. You give him the information. You tell him, hey, listen, maybe we should, you should sit out and we're rehabbing and whatnot, or you say, hey, listen, you can't damage it no more than what it is. Now, we say a fracture, but we don't know the extent of the fracture.
Hairline
fracture, whatever, something small. Yes, it is. Yes, it is uncomfortable. Yes, it does hurt, but it's not going to stop him from playing. Here's my thing.
Don't you go after it, though, if you're Rashawn Evans or any of these guys?
And
like, aren't you trying to hit him right on the shoulder?
I mean, you can't avoid it. He can't avoid it.
Right.
So it's like, even if he wanted to avoid it, he couldn't. But here's the thing to me. Josh Jacobs, who does it help when you announce to the world? There's a reason why the Oakland Raiders didn't say anything.
Right.
It's a reason why coaches are coy when they talk about injuries. It's a reason why Peter Laviolette is the greatest at that. There's a reason for that, okay? True. Dummy. And yes, I'm going to call you a dummy because now you draw attention to yourself. People know you're hurt now.
Well, and people immediately went back and checked the injury reports because if he wasn't listed by the Raiders in any of those weeks where he was hurt, you can get in trouble, right? If you don't if you don't release the injury.
If you don't, they put the injury.
He's been on the injury report, I think, since that week seven. Uh-huh. So, like, again, like, I don't think the Raiders did anything wrong in this. But I'm kind of with you. Like, why... why post that? Why
these guys? They it's all.
Does
about,
he get credit though?
No, he doesn't get credit. I mean, you're out there playing, and listen,
the team knows what you're going through.
Yeah, guys play through things that you know that sometimes no one really knows about. They might say they won't give the full extent of the injury that they say. Like I had a broken scapula. They said it was I had an injured shoulder. That's all they had to put in the in the report, injury report. But I knew
this is in Baltimore.
Yeah, this is in Baltimore. I knew that the remainder of the 10 games I could play, but I couldn't do much in practice. That year I would only practice twice a week for two periods a week, third down in red zone. That's all I practiced.
And was there a lot more practice time then than there is now as far as pads and hitting and everything?
Oh, yeah. But this was when, it was right before the new collective bargaining agreement. So, yeah. But, I mean, during a week, it wasn't as long because you can only go so many hours.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So, but we never divulged that, he has a broken scapula. He has a broken scapula, a torn rotator cuff, dislocated. They didn't say all that. They said he has a hurt shoulder.
Is that when you went up for a pass and got flipped over or whatever and landed on your shoulder and then
it was in the Houston game.
And it was all in one play, you did all that damage?
Yeah. But we didn't put that, you know, he had a broken scapula, da da da. Just like sure. And then I didn't go out there and say, I got a broken scapula, man. I mean, hell, I tore my rotator cuff and I dislocated my arm. But I'm still going out there and playing.
Right.
Why would I do that? For what purpose?
I mean, if it makes
Josh Jacobs, why?
Like, I understand if you're trying to, you know, listen, he's on a rookie deal. So he's not going to be getting a first-round pick. He's going to have a fifth-year option. He's going to be like Zeke Elliott. By the time year three rolls around, he's going to be begging for more money and begging for a new contract because, frankly, he's like fourth in the NFL in rushing right now. He's a great receiver, but is not being used in that sense. I could see him being used that way this week, especially with the Titans' injuries in the secondary. But it's, you know, the only thing he has to gain is his next contract. And if he's trying to convince Oakland, hey, I'm playing through a lot of pain for you. You guys need to pay me. Well, they already know everything. It's not like he needs to convince anybody on the outside world that he's playing through this stuff. I mean, sure, it makes him look tougher. Like I have more respect for him because I think it sounds insane to be a running back where the two things that hit the most are your shoulders into other people, and you've got a fractured right shoulder. If I'm Kevin Byard, I'm taking shots at it, man. I don't think it's
why not?
It's not dirty. I mean, you're just gonna hit the guy anyway. You might as well. Go after the right shoulder.
I'm getting up slow on his shoulder. I'm pushing down as I get up. I'm pushing myself up.
Did you think that was dirty when you were a player? When somebody did something like that to you?
No, I just thought it was when I was injured. I knew that because I've had guys that told me, "Listen, we went at your shoulder."
Right.
And I'm like, hey, it's fair game because I'm out there playing. What are they not going to do?
Right.
Oh, we're not going to touch you, Macy, because you showed her. No,
but
they are.
Not like, but there's not like some unwritten.
No, it's like, hey, listen, I'm out here. Now, if you go do something, you know, that's kind of like out
after
of the bounds.
Yeah,
okay. But if it's in the middle of the play and you're just tugging at it or you're getting up and tugging at it a little bit. Yeah. What, I mean, If I'm Kevin Byard and I see him on the ground, I'm kind of like, okay. Or I help him up.
Jerk him by the shoulder.
And get up, little man.
Then it looks like you're helping.
Exactly.
That'd be funny as you see all the guys like, he puts out his left arm, uh-huh, and Kevin Byard's like, no, he's my right hand.
Give me your right arm. Yeah, give me your right arm, buddy. Give me your right arm.
Oh, that's funny. And it's why hockey, it's part of why I understand why hockey is the way, mm-hmm, it is, and part of why I hate the way hockey is. Because, like, if you think that team doctors and other players don't know what's going on with a guy, like, they all kind of know what's going on. But Lavi and the coaching staff, for most hockey teams, they just say upper body, lower body, because they don't have to say anything more than that. I just don't think that it would really change the game all that much if, mm-hmm, everybody knew so-and-so had a shoulder problem or a knee problem or whatever. Like, we know. When we look at an injury, generally we know what happened, or at least the area of the body. It's not like the other team doesn't know. They're going to go after it. So I've always kind of thought it's silly that hockey doesn't have to divulge the injury. I think it's kind of silly. So,
but Josh is doing it for attention. So people can say, oh, you're tough, Josh.
I guess. I don't.
Because there's no other reason to do it. I mean, it's not like, again, it's not like Oakland. It's not like Oakland is saying, no, you're not injured.
Right.
And they didn't put you on the injury report. Then you come out and say, no, I'm injured. This is why.
Which would have gotten me.
Exactly. So it's like, man, you only hurt yourself when you do that.
Well, it should be interesting. Obviously, a lot of those Titans players, again, Humphreys, Davis, Henry, all not participating in practice, along with LaShawn Sims and Adoree Jackson. So we'll keep an eye on. Those are the big ones. They went out and signed Tremaine Brock yesterday, mm-hmm, brought in some new bodies. If that's any indication of maybe where the health is on some of these guys in secondary, they went out and got some more guys. Ty Smith playing a lot of minutes last week against the Colts, so keeping an eye on that secondary is a big, big deal. There's all kinds of possibilities for the Tennessee Titans at 0-4 or 4-0 down the stretch. I think all things are in play. We'll get to that a little bit later on. However, Georgia and LSU, I would like to know what we think will happen. Should LSU win, who gets in? And if Georgia wins, who gets in? I'd like to know those questions and those rankings. We'll discuss that when we come back right here on Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.